You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about chapter 4 of the book 90 Day Soulmate. Chapter 4 is called Mismatched Souls from the book 90 Day Soulmate. Hey, look at the giant version of the book on the wall. If you want to copy that size for easy reading, well, we don't offer it, but in any case, this is the rest of our studio. We always shoot direct to the wall back here, and we were just looking online, and some people said, hey, be interesting to see a little bit more, what is it called, angular shots. All right, make it a little bit more interesting, mix it up a bit. So getting back to mismatched souls, what is that? Chapter 4, mismatched souls. Well, I think the number one thing is, we talk about media, we talk about information out there, we talk about what people think of when they think about a soulmate, when they think about a relationship.
Yeah, some kind of the concept about what is soulmate.
Everyone has their own idea of what a soulmate should be. And unfortunately, a lot of the understanding of what a soulmate should be comes from romantic comedies, comes from movies and books, marketing. You know, a one-minute advertisement that shows a relationship of two different people, and oh, they're in love. She put on a perfume. He wore a special hat. He drove a car. She's hang gliding. Whatever it is, it's this excitement that's built in this commercial advertising. Two people just attracted to each other in the most unrealistic way. Let's look at some of this. First of all, in a study done in 2013 looking at romantic comedies, we saw and found, not we did, but the study found that there were four commonly portrayed romantic ideals in rom-coms, romantic comedies. The concept of a soulmate, and not only of a soulmate, but the one and only. This is the person. You know, from a standpoint, I think I remember the movie about, who was that? Robin Hood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would die for you. And the thought of the hero and the person who supports the hero, and that they would do anything for each other. And that is like the portrayal that we see in so many of these romantic comedies. The one and only. Not that you could find somebody who becomes your soulmate.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Try to have fidelity. Just one.
Find one. Don't have seven soulmates. That's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, to handle at the same time that you can find in the future.
Sequentially. But there's a concept of soulmate which we discuss, which has to do with how connected you are with that person on a deep level. Mm-hmm. And if you can focus on that type of relationship, you can build a deep relationship with different people. There's not just one person, mm-hmm. but hopefully you'll find that one who you want to spend time with if that's what you choose. Let's look at number two, the idealization of a romantic interest, meaning that that one person you're interested in has all these ideal qualities. They're so beautiful. They're so attractive. They're so strong. They're so smart that there's this idealization, meaning
it's you.
Thank you. And that's the end of the show. Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jean.
The idealization, it's kind of like that, is that mm-hmm. you, but it's the idealization, not of the person yet, but of what that person would be. Mm-hmm. That they are going to be your soulmate, and therefore that person has to have all these qualities because that is what we're being shown in these romantic qualities. Sorry, romantic comedies. Nice. Let's go on with that. Love conquers all obstacles. So no matter how far-fetched the storyline is, these two people who are meant to be with each other above all odds are going to somehow find themselves together. Is this reality, or is this just created to make us emotionally invested in the movie? Yeah. I do cry during movies. So like when there's these scenes of people coming together and it's, they've made it through these challenges. Sometimes I feel so like happy, so happy. I cry.
Okay. Next.
Emotion. It's emotion. But the point is that we get these emotions deeply attached to these things that we picture, and therefore they become part of our brain patterns of what we think a romantic partner or soulmate should be.
Yeah.
Lastly, love at first sight. So many of these romantic comedies have two people. They come across each other in a coffee shop. Walking down the street, one bumps into the other. Somebody accidentally gets the other's delivery. There's just something that happens that put the two people next to each other and they're in love at first sight, but they never get the other person's name or phone number or email address. And then the whole movie, it's the interplay of, are they ever going to get together? Are they ever going to get back together? And that's what we infuse ourselves with. And these are fallacies. These aren't real. They're not realistic. The messages are not only in the romantic comedies and movies, but they're expressed on an average of every 14 minutes in the movie. And 98% of the films contain at least one such expression. So on average, it's 14 minutes. So if some only have one portrayal, others have 20, 30, 40 instances of these things occurring. And so this is stuff that we're patterned in our brains, especially the more we connect. Now, I did read something about that if we can disassociate ourselves from the movie and say, oh, this is just fantasy, I understand it's not real life, we can keep a fresh, clean perspective of maybe a relationship. However, many of us get involved and see that as, oh, I want that type of relationship.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in our lives. The idealization, what is idealization? When we describe a partner or romantic interest as exaggeratedly perfect, so their attractiveness maybe, their sexual compatibility, this is what's done in the romantic ideal in these rom-coms. They're so attractive. They're so compatible. They can read my thoughts. I want to do this and they do it for me. Oh my gosh, it's
these so connected.
Relationship components such as expectations. There we go. That's the mind reading piece. Sorry. The mind reading or intuitive feelings from a partner that we just know how they feel. And we learn this as an expectation that our soulmate should know my every feeling and desire and need and want and be able to fulfill it without any reason for me to ask. Mm. I don't need to ask. They should just do it. Thank you, baby.
I did.
One might also consider an idealized partner as a soulmate. So these romantic comedies use an idealized partner as this is that person's soulmate, one and only, and their qualities are beyond anybody else's qualities. It's the perfect person. So idealization actually can be good. We're going to look at it for better and for worse, just like a marriage, right? So they're good. There's good and bad that comes with idealization. We've actually discussed studies that talk about idealization in relationships and how they are beneficial to the relationship. You can have increased satisfaction in the relationship. So if you idealize your partner, and I'll say based upon a set of features that are actually relatively in line with that idealization, maybe not as high, like maybe they're in the top 80% of how attractive people are, but you just see them as very attractive. That would be something that helps increase the satisfaction and well-being of the relationship. It can create less distress in the relationship, and you can have self-fulfilling positive outcomes over the long term. So when you idealize your partner, and I will say relatively realistically, and you're looking for the good in what they do, you're looking for and complimenting, you're saying thank you, you have gratitude, that these things end up in well-being. Now, let's take idealization to an extreme. It can be worse. It can make unrealistic perfection as what you're expecting in the relationship. And when there are differences in the idealized and actual characteristics of a partner, that can create stress. I expect this thing, but I'm getting this. You're in my own mind, you're not fulfilling what I expect. Lower relationship stability for long distance partners who move closer together. I thought that was interesting. Hmm. People meet.
Okay.
Right? They say they meet. I'm in California on a sales meeting. I meet somebody who's from Denver, and we hit it off, and we just have this great time for that 1 or 2 days we're together in California. Now we start corresponding, and I just remember how wonderful it was. I project how wonderful it would be. And we correspond, and we have this long-distance relationship. I may go visit. They may go visit me. And you may have these wonderful 2-day visits. And when you're apart, your heart grows fonder. You think of how wonderful it would be if they were with you every day. And then they are with you every day, every minute of the day. But we've probably all had these type of relationships. Yeah. Somebody who is good in small doses.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like sugar. Like a little bit of sugar. That's great, but just sugar. It's going to go bad. What else do we have? Oh my. Increased pressure to meet high expectations and decreased willingness to accommodate a partner's needs. So your partner will feel an increased pressure to meet your expectations. But at the same time, because they're not meeting your expectations, you may be more unwilling to accommodate their needs. Oh, well, they're not doing what I expect them to do, so I'm not going to do this for them. And it becomes
drama.
Revenge.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're not meeting my unrealistic expectations, so I'm going to not fulfill anything that they'd expect from me. So it's actually the mismatch of expectations, and you actually separate and push each other apart from there. The negative impact associated with high expectation of mind reading. I love this one. You come home from work, you've had a really difficult time at work. You expect your partner to actually understand that you had a difficult time at work, but you've said nothing. And then when they don't understand why you're so upset, so angry, why you're so disturbed, you're like, how come they don't understand? They should know me, right? So this high expectation that they can read your mind. They should know your every need. Because, again, we fantasize about what this soulmate or what this partner should be, and it just doesn't always work out that way, does it? So this ends our intro into mismatched souls. And the main part of what we're seeing in this mismatched is that we have expectations of relationships based upon what we're pre-programmed with, not only family, but media. Romantic comedies was our focus. And we go into a relationship with all these thoughts, and we have somebody else going into all these thoughts. And when we first meet, we're in this honeymoon stage, and we really don't have this in-depth process of our patterns being revealed. And we're not really noticing the other person's patterns because we're such deeply in love.
Intoxicated, yeah.
We're intoxicated.
Yeah.
Right? So the prefrontal cortex shuts down. We'll talk about that all the time. But the chemicals that are out there when you first meet somebody shield you from really analyzing and observing objectively their behavior in your behavior.
Yeah.
I think this is actually nature's way to fake us into relationships so we can continue the species. Because if we really objectively observed everyone from the very beginning, we may only be in like 10% of the relationships that we've been in.
Yeah.
Or none. Who knows?
gone. The gone. Planet is gone.
If I objectively observe myself, I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with myself, you know? What the heck? Anyway, when we come back, we'll talk more about mismatched souls here on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Golnick. Actually, Jim Golnick.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She travelled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about Pygmalion. Now, we, in our break here, we started talking about idolization and for better, the better part. And Lizette brought up, go ahead.
Yeah, so the movie is Pretty Woman, when the guy treat her like the prince and then take care her the expectation, and she also feel that she is. So that's like the idealization better versus worse. So
right.
When you treat somebody well, the people are acting well, and then you create better idealization.
And I agree. I find interesting the movie itself. So Julia Roberts plays the prostitute, mm-hmm. but she's a really nice prostitute. You know, yeah. She's the ideal
all
prostitute.
All prostitutes right? is nice. What is wrong?
they're all nice. The point being is that if you find a, you know, it's of course a fantasy movie, but it gives us again a pattern. Oh, if we just treat this person well, they will act this way. Sure, it will help them be able to act that way. Like the, what is that? Not The Sound of Music, the movie Mary. No, I'm going to say Mary Poppins. It's not that. It's called. It's not Pygmalion. It's the one where. The woman is, there's a bet between two scientists, and the one says he can take a woman from the street and make her a proper lady, and My Fair Lady. It's called My Fair Lady.
Okay.
You know this movie? Oh, it was before your time. In any case, in the movie, we know that a person who grew up with not the right dialect, not the proper speech patterns, was trained by a scientist to show that you could take somebody and mold them into something different, and then they can live up to that.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely true if the person who you're doing this idealization with actually wants to grow in that direction. The problem with relationships is your idealization of your partner may not be anywhere that they want to grow or go. Like, if you think this person just treats me so well, and you're like, well, I've been thinking that they do, I've been telling them that they do, but they haven't been, and they haven't changed their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The better part of it, it is allows growth in a direction if two people want to go in that direction. But idealization that is absent from reality is the opposite. It creates stress. It creates cognitive dissonance, because behaviors don't match thoughts and thought patterns. And then when you get that anxiety, it just hurts the relationship.
Yeah.
So we'll continue on with the first story in our book of chapter 4 is about Tom and Mary. And we start off by reviewing romantic comedies in the book. So we start off with, you remember the plot of almost any romantic comedy. They repeatedly miscommunicate because each is afraid to express their feelings, but they're meant to be together, and they overcome all odds, and they do this. And the romantic attraction is, or the communication in romantic attraction is supremely important. Because it's what will continue the relationship beyond that formation stage. Mm-hmm. So the communication we see and the ability to get through it in a romantic comedy doesn't always happen in real life.
Yeah.
So we talked about real life versus fictional. In a fictional relationship, the writer leads two people together who would never, in any other circumstance, be together other than in that movie. In real life, you don't have a writer leading you together to this fictionalized, idealized soulmate.
Yeah.
So it becomes a little bit more logic. Yes, there is some component of faith, some component of belief, some component of spiritual, but there has to be a process that allows that to bloom.
It's almost like the... when you see the people, is love be in relationship versus love the person we are. So some people idealize that, oh, I wanna be with somebody, and it's more strong versus be with the person.
To be with somebody, and not necessarily that has to be any one person. It's just they can then talk to, I can go to work and talk about my girlfriend did this with me,
exactly.
My girlfriend,
and
we
social,
did this, and we
because
did this.
The people
we
like to wedding. Show in the social, right. they have a partner, so they try to keep something. It's fantasy, it's not real.
So do you think part of the concept of relationships is man-made?
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Meaning that if you go to evolutionary biology, men and women, different creatures wanted to stay together to support each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it could be that we're doing it from a standpoint of protection, a standpoint of getting food, standpoint of mating. Part of that is drive, survival, and you know, we have that instinct to move that way. That the long-term, long commitment, and remember that life now being 70, 80, 90 years potentially expected is a lot different than when you only expect 20, 30 years of life. Mm-hmm. And that if you mate short term, you're not thinking that, okay, now I do that, I'm going to be with somebody for 30, 40, 50 years. So how does that change the relationship? And when did this concept of, you know, one person forever come into effect?
It's difficult.
The point is if you want to be with one person, because it's so complex changing relationships, and I know that it's so much better to have one long-term committed relationship from my point of view, right?
Yeah.
For us, it's been wonderful.
Yeah.
So we are trying to say, for those who want to pattern their relationships kind of in the essence that we have, then we are suggesting ways of doing that. If you want different pattern of relationships, then there are other research you can do, right?
Everybody's freedom.
So we want to talk about Mary and Tom, and I'm going to talk about these two characters that we reveal in the book. They're actually from some past association that we have, two people we know. Tom is now 38 and single, but with a positive attitude, and he says he's open to receiving a new relationship. He meets a single woman about the same age, named Mary. By the way, this is in chapter 4 of the book, 90 Day Soulmate. Mary, who is very friendly and cheerful, they enter into a magical courtship phase and begin going to dinner, movies, and walking to the park. And the relationship grows during the first month. Both are so attracted to each other. They have relatively good communication, share many things together, and everything appears to be going very well during this formation stage of their relationship. Mary falls in love with Tom. His seduction process proceeds to the next level. They feel that they're on the same page. They're heading in the same direction. She begins to accelerate the relationship and wants to spend more and more and more time with him, share more activities with him, and get involved in the family. But maybe they're not on the same page. That's next. Tom feels things should slow down a little bit, that they're going a little bit too fast, he thinks to himself. He feels pressured to be in this relationship, but now he doesn't want to share those thoughts with Mary. Why? He doesn't want to hurt her. He loves her, and he's just thinking, I'll just keep these thoughts to myself. He begins looking for excuses to delay meetings or dates, to spend a little more time separated than the time she wants to spend together. And his unconscious process of separation starts to grow. Tom feels it's too soon to say anything to Mary. He doesn't want to say to her, let's take things slower. He's afraid to say that, but he's not saying it, but he's doing it. He's taking things slower. He's really unsure of what he wants. So what's going on with Tom? Why doesn't he want to move at the same pace that Mary does? Why is their connection suffering? Her mind pictures him with someone else because they're not spending as much time together as she wants. Like, why is he not spending as much time? Why doesn't he want to do that? If she's not good enough for him, or even worse, could he just be using her? And is he two-timing? Who is he having this conversation with if he's not having conversations with her? Right? That's what he feels. That's what she feels. It's hard to show her affection from Tom's point of view while she is, actually it's from her point of view, it's hard to show him affection because she doubts him. And in doubting him, she doesn't trust him, and not trusting him, she doesn't want to get heartbroken again. So she doesn't really feel as romantically attracted anymore. Obviously, this relationship is going to be a dead end. Tom, again, on the other hand, now feels Mary is not the same person as before. Because she's not trusting him and acting differently, he's going, what's going on with her? He tries to recover the connection with her, but it's too late. She's not sure about Tom and thinks he has another relationship. Mary's distance leads him to believe she has someone else. So now he believes she has someone else and is not interested in him anymore because she wanted to spend all her time with him. And now that she's unsure and doesn't trust him and doesn't want to get hurt, he thinks, oh, she must have someone else. So they both sadly feel this relationship is falling apart. He believes that Mary is a person of fleeting emotions. At one point, she's just so in love, and now she shows that she isn't. And he doesn't know what's going on. Let's go into their patterns, okay? So both of them are being controlled by Mr. Subconscious. If you remember this story, let's go to their parents. Mary's parents are younger parents. They believe that life is fleeting, that life is short, that you need to love and love hard, that you need to communicate, over-communicate, spend all your time together, do exciting things. And that's Mary's parents. Tom's parents, on the other hand, are older. They are determinately slower paced. They believe that you prove love through consistency and action, not really having to spend a lot of time together, but knowing that you're going to be there for the other. Mm-hmm. Tom and Mary just came from different places. Yeah. They didn't realize that they came from different places because they never talked about where they came from. They never discussed the patterns of the past of their parents.
Yeah. So both have different software and a lot of suggestion and a lot of different moment. I see some people ask me about how quick the woman or man start to dating and fall in love. You know, some people say, I believe it's not woman or man, and for me it's personality. You know, some people go more fast, and then when the people go more fast feel love, and the other people go slowly, and then when these people fall in love, these people is tired.
Yeah.
And the relationship is
Now you fall in love.
Yeah, it's late because I am no longer. So that's I have many friends. They have this feeling.
So the person, and is it usually, is it women versus men, or is it different?
I guess it's personality.
Okay.
The high percent, I see the woman go more fast and the man more slowly for falling in love. When the man fall in love, the woman said, "I don't feel anything."
But I think there's so many differences between people. It could be men, woman. It could be anybody. Yeah. They're just out of sync in how their pattern is of falling in love.
Yeah,
one person may relish long-term relationship that shows commitment to the relationship and being there for the other no matter what, and the other is more focused on, I want to spend as much time with you all the time because I love you so much. And somebody can see that as, well, they're over emotional, and the other can see the other one as they're cold.
Yeah.
And they might both long term be wonderful for each other.
Yeah, maybe, but this moment is critical.
It's very critical.
People is intoxicate, and at the same time is have different program, like you said, parents. Mm. Where are you coming from? So maybe go good. Who knows?
Well, when we come back, we're going to now analyze that story of Tom and Mary. I hope you got a great understanding, general picture of what was going on with them. Now we're going to look at that in detail, and we'll be back right after this on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about mismatched souls. We just talked about the story about Tom and Mary, who began a relationship hot and heavy and ended it because each of them had a different view of how a relationship should be and what commitment meant. Let's look into the story of Tom and Mary. Tom is now 38 and single, but with a positive attitude. They have relatively good communication. That's how the story started. The story started with them actually getting along really well. And we, on that slide, you just saw, maybe you did or maybe you didn't, that this is the honeymoon phase of the relationship. This is where you just are so intoxicated with each other that you feel that even just looking at each other, it's good communication, because you're actually, your brains are half shut off, mm-hmm. and the communication is chemical. My chemicals are talking to Lizette's chemicals. And we'll be back. So that was how it started. So it seemed like it started off with good communication. Next, the communication started to break down. But maybe they're not on the same page anymore. He just doesn't have the courage to tell her how he feels. And we want to point out the significance of honest communication and the effects of avoidance on relationships. That if you are not communicating when you feel like things are not going well, you might not ever figure out if it's two people that just don't want to be with each other, or two people that have just different patterns of love, mm-hmm. different patterns of commitment. Yeah. the role and fear of assumptions. So Mary has to wonder if he's losing interest. This fear, as she starts to wonder, makes her first fight harder for the relationship. So when she thinks he's losing interest, like he starts pulling away, she feels that and is pulled closer to him to try to go, hey, I want to build this relationship. But this is now fear and assumption. She thinks he's pulling away, and he just thinks she's moving too fast. So they're actually both moving towards their preferred relationship strategy. They don't realize it, but they then recognize that there's something different about how they're approaching the relationship, and each starts to point out the flaws in their own mind of the other's approach to the relationship. So fear and assumptions in relationships have to do with attachment styles as well. Continue on with this. Tom and Mary's speech to each other is controlled by Mr. Subconscious. Past experiences and subconscious beliefs shape current relationships. Well, we know that. So what we know, and we talk about the speech, well, internal speech, different than external speech.
Yeah.
So Tom's point of view, internally he feels things, but subconsciously he's also telling himself, or consciously under his breath, he's saying, I don't want to share this with her because I'll hurt her. Right? Because if I tell her I want to take things slower, she's going to be hurt. Mm-hmm. And how do I actually say it? Because I know she's going to react because she's trying to take things quickly, and I'm not ready to take things quickly. And now I start overthinking the relationship. So the subconscious starts driving us in our actions. Pretudes, predisposed attitudes and relationship dynamics. Tom and Mary suffer from these predispositions and attitudes developed in their youth by watching their parents. There's a profound effect of the upbringing and early life experience on adult relationships. So coming into the relationship with the predispositions, Tom with his parents being older and having long-term commitment and a slow and steady way of having a relationship, and Mary's with the younger couple as role models, as parents, where they're really active, they're doing lots of things together, and that's love. They are coming into this with predispositions and attitudes, and these are subconscious.
Yeah.
So we know that that will impact the adult relationship. So we're suggesting they need to recognize and overcome subconscious sabotage. Kind of like in last week's program, we talked about subconscious sabotage. Maybe Tom and Mary could be a perfect match, but subconscious sabotage won the battle. We need to look at strategies for recognizing and overcoming subconscious sabotage in relationships. Number one, we have to understand what our patterns and programs are.
Yeah. And also it's difficult when people start to dating, the be open communication, you know what I mean? So they don't want to overwhelm the person to say, why this bring this kind of the knowledge about relationship we are dating? So, and avoid this step that is important.
It's difficult because some people are uncomfortable sharing information, and when somebody else starts sharing information, they're like, oh, this is too much. Too much too soon.
Yeah.
But it might be the exact information you need to develop a relationship. So is there a happy medium? Maybe people have to agree in the relationship. Do we want to develop this relationship more deeply? Mm-hmm. Do we want to be able to understand each other better? And therefore, what are we going to do? Yeah. And one is that self-observation and analysis. Oh, look at that, what the next slide is. The importance of self-assessment in finding a soulmate. So we want to do a self-assessment. The self-assessment helps us in finding compatible partners. Mm-hmm. The observation of knowing who we are in our own patterns before we get into that relationship. And then being able to openly share that.
And also you can see in the case that the Tom or Mary do the assessment, they can identify, oh, I coming from one family like that, and this is my concept for love, versus the believe the person don't like me or I don't like the person is how is the concept for love.
So imagine Tom and Mary coming, sitting down with us, and we work through a, let's look at the patterns of your past relationships. Let's look at the patterns of your upbringing and your parents and their relationship. And they go through that and they create this profile of what it was like, what they have in their subconscious moving them into a certain direction. And now they share that with each other. And all of a sudden, it's like magic. It opens up a door to communication because they have access to the words. They have access to the actions that create love from the other person's point of view.
Yeah, you can identify your feeling because the feeling can be mismatched when you don't identify well.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing about mismatched souls is that you're mismatching if you don't know the underlying subconscious piece. When you can remove the subconscious differences between two people, and we talk about this in the book, is that souls want to be with souls. And the things that get in our way are our conscious and subconscious and unconscious. And when we can consciously talk about something, great. But when we can reveal our subconscious to our partner, and they can understand where our programs and patterns come from, we start removing these layers from our soul, and we open our soul to receive the other person, to be connected.
I see a guy that say sometimes you believe the person don't love you, and it's wrong. It's the way how love each other. So maybe for me, love you is cooking a good meal, but for you, love is a play a song in the guitar. So may we have different language for love, and then we believe he don't love me or she don't love me. It's not like that.
We need to know their pattern for love, not only my own pattern for love, but we have to share that pattern with our partner. What do we have next here? Oh, conclusion and moving forward. So, in essence, sometimes you might just know someone isn't right for you during the first date. Get to know the person a little bit more. Let me talk about that in a minute here. The value of giving relationships time to develop, and the psychological benefits of a second chance. It was actually funny. We were watching that movie called The After Party, or TV show called The After Party, and the first season is about second chance. There was one episode where it's the second chance. The first second chance, right? And that if you give somebody a second chance, it may open the door to understanding that you didn't know before. When you date somebody and you're like, you know what, this doesn't really seem to fit, if you are assessing your date as, is it love at first sight, that may be the wrong way to get into a relationship. Maybe it should be not love at first sight, but is it love at a deep understanding of each other and your patterns and differences? And if you're only seeing, if you're chemically attracted and you never get to those deep-rooted patterns and programs, you may be missing out on somebody who has the same pattern and program you do, who's consciously a little different or chemically right now in that initial chemistry state, different. Does there have to be enormous chemistry in order to have patterns that fit?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, it doesn't. But when you start developing patterns that tie yourself together, like upbringing and culture and maybe your religious and spiritual views, and as you start diving deep into those, you may start connecting at such a deep level that all of a sudden bubble up this chemistry that's deep within you that you didn't know existed on that surface level, one being the evolutionary level of chemistry, and the other being this deep conscious, subconscious, unconscious level of connection. Lastly, now that we have wandered through romantic comedies and how we're programmed in the wrong way to view romance and partners, and how we can make the wrong assumptions because of our biases, what do we do? How do we move forward? Moving forward, let's create a list. The book's all about creating your list, and we'll call it your magic list. If you are not in a relationship, or if you are in a relationship, it can be done the same way. First, use self-observation, find out who we are as ourselves, who we are, finding out what we would like to be, defining what we want in a relationship. Part of this is almost when you do a gap analysis, right? So when you do a gap analysis for a company, you know, who you are, what do you want to be, what do you need to go from here to here, what do you want in a relationship? So what do you want, you know, in a business? But let's stick with people. I know who I am. Do I really want to be that? Do I want to learn to be something different? We talk about self-growth and growing ourselves to be stronger as a person, therefore being able to have a stronger relationship. So what's next on that? So once we have done our self-observation of finding out who we are and what we would like to be and what we want in a relationship, we can look at creating a list of what we want in our soulmate. So we can go beyond the relationship. We can detail the very essence that complements us. What fits us? What fits our patterns? What do we want their upbringing to be? What do we want their parents to be like? What do we want their values to be? Believe our thoughts and actions create reality. Very important. Write that.
I love this part.
You do? That our thoughts and actions create reality. That we can say, oh, I'm going to pick this up, and my reality is I just moved this book from here to here. I had to think about doing it, and I had to do it. Thought and action. The belief is, I believed I could pick that book up. But those are very simple things. We can do that with almost any area of our life. We can learn something new, learn a new pattern. And that we can create a new reality based upon that. Finally, once you have your list, the internalizing and focus on our list. Who's our ideal partner? What are the soulmate qualities? What are the relationship wants? And what's our self-commitment to making sure that we support this relationship? Allowing our subconscious to work for us, filter external stimulus and noise automatically, and neutralizes contradictions in our observation. That's deep. So once we have this deep list of who we are and what we want in a relationship, the power of the book 90 Day Soulmate is not to be going out there actively going, are you my soulmate? Are you my soulmate? Are you my soulmate? But to actually understand about yourself and what you want in a soulmate, and then your subconscious will do the work for you. It will be an automatic filter.
Yeah.
It's like, and you've heard this story from us before, it's like if I say red Volkswagen Beetle and you start looking for red Volkswagen Beetles, everywhere you look, you're going to start seeing them even when you stop actively looking for them because you've been doing research into them. If you do research into what you want in your relationship, what do you want for yourself, what do you want to find in a connection, and you really detail that and you work on that, you don't have to actively think about it. It automatically is attracted to you.
Yeah, well, for you, and also like the minimize the contradiction and the because typical people, okay, you're looking for the red Volkswagen, you see the people driving a Ford, a blue sedan.
And I like that one.
And they say, what happened with their, oh.
Yeah. So what do you really want?
Yeah.
But if you tell yourself, I really want the red Volkswagen Beetle and I don't want this blue thing, when you see the blue thing, you can say, I don't want it. You need to know what you want. Because if you only know what you don't want, you're going to start seeing everything you don't want because you're focused on what you don't want. Your brain grows in the areas of the things you think about daily.
Yeah. And you be attraction, as I always say, about the hole in the when you drive, you know, you see the hole in the street.
Yep.
And you watch in the hole and then you're, oh, boom. You go in the hole. So watch in the good way.
It's like when I ride motorcycle, they say the same thing, is that you want to look to where you're going.
Yeah.
Not look to where you're not going, because you'll end up going in the way you're looking. Yeah. That you focus on where you want to be, not where you were. But you need to know where you were to understand what the direction your life will drive you if you do not look back. You need to look back to understand how to change your direction forward. Right, so you got to look at those past patterns, those past programs, in order to understand what you need and want to change. And then also how to discuss that with your partner. Because by discussing and opening up your subconscious thoughts and programs to your partner, help you not get mismatched, help you match your partner, and may help you match the partner you're already with. By understanding what goes into their thoughts and actions on a daily basis, so your idealization is in line with what they can do and provide in the relationship. Thanks for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Tim.
Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.